Welcome to Positively Psychic. Positively Psychic. 2 hours of fascinating interviews and call-ins with your host, the Positively Psychic medium, Mark Christopher Nelson. Positively Psychic. During the show, Mark will invite you to call in to speak with him and his guests. Call in for a free reading and contact your guides, guardian angels, friends, and loved ones on the other side. Positively Psychic. Join the online chat to share thoughts and experiences with like-minded souls at www.para-x.com. Positively Psychic. Listen in now as the Positively Psychic medium, Mark Christopher Nelson, interviews leading experts in the paranormal field, takes your calls, and answers your questions on Positively Psychic.
Hello and welcome to Positively Psychic. I'm your psychic medium host, Mark Christopher Nelson, and I'm here with my psychic spouse.
Hello, everyone. How are you out there this evening?
Barbara sounds so very formal. She's become quite formal in her old age. I'm in trouble now. Okay. Well, I wanted to say, everyone, tonight, thanks for listening, or thanks for joining us. We actually have a terrific guest with a very personal and powerful story to tell. He is Mark Ireland, psychic and author of an incredible book that I've just finished and I really loved it, called Soul Shift, Finding Where the Dead Go. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me here, Mark. I think I can remember your name.
If you can't, I would say that there are some issues that you should probably look into.
Exactly.
Well, actually, Mark, what's funny is I don't get a chance to say this many guests, but as I've read your book and learned a little bit about you, we actually have quite a bit in common. You're a dad. You work in advertising. And along the way, you discovered that you're psychic.
Well, I guess what I threw out there is that I grew up with a father who is tremendously psychic and counseled a lot of celebrities like Mae West, who I got to meet when I was a kid, and some others. And I saw this kind of phenomenal psychic ability, and I didn't really try to be like my dad, but I've seen little bits and pieces of it throughout, and I'd say, you know, more recent years, I've just been more open to it and aware of it. And I'm not saying it's anything that jumps out at me all the time, but sometimes I'll get little things, and they turn out to be correct, so I trust it more. So I guess I don't call myself a psychic, but I think everybody has that ability to some degree. And so a big part of it is becoming aware of the subtle feelings and paying attention to them. And when you do that, you realize, hey, we all have some of this.
I agree. And, you know, I have to tell you, I've kidded some of my other guests, but in reading your book, and it's a beautiful book, by the way, and I don't get the opportunity to read the entire book all the time, but this one really hit me. I would say that a lot of my guests who are in a similar position, say to you, in terms of in being open and learning, they'll say, well, I'm not really a psychic, but then I get this, and I had this, and I hear this, and I do this, and I'm not really a psychic, but then this appears, and this happens. And if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, it's a psychic. So that would be my advice. You know, it took me a while to admit to it. I mean, I had a full career. I still do. I still work in advertising, as you do. And it's just been an interesting thing to have so much in common with a guest. However, in some ways we have other things in common. But I wanted to just say that. First off, let's talk a little bit about your dad and your upbringing. You did bring that up, and your father was the very famous and eminent psychic, Richard Ireland. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Sure. Well, going back to the days when I was a young kid, I just remember my father was an interesting personality in that he had his own church, which is a non-denominational church, but he really built it around the whole focus of the idea of the gifts of the Spirit. And that he felt that the gifts he had were a gift from God, and they were there to help people, help others in a variety of ways. But one of the things that struck me at a very young age was I saw him demonstrate mediumship. So I could see this, you know, he would do the psychic stuff, but then occasionally in the middle of giving somebody a message, you know, they might want to know something about a new job or whatever. And his method was what's called blindfold billet, but he did it in a very unique and compelling way in that he would take 10 Johnson & Johnson medical tape strips and cover his eyes, three black blindfolds over that, and then more tape over that, and sealing every possible area, even including his nostrils, so people wouldn't think there's any way he could see. Then people in the audience, if it was in, say, a public venue, which could be a nightclub or a meeting of some group, or if it was in the church, people would write down questions on pieces of paper and send them up, oftentimes folded or whatever. And then he would answer their questions, often going above and beyond whatever they'd written, and usually providing first and last names, and then a lot of things that would hit home. But I'd see the evidence of the mediumship from time to time when he'd bring up the name of someone who had passed and talked about their relationship to that person. So it struck me, even as a young child, that was very powerful, and that was my favorite thing that I saw. And it just gave me compelling evidence, like, gosh, we really do live after this life. And that was very valuable to me later on, because, as you know, my son passed about 6 years ago. So being able to draw on that and then go from there with that as a reference point in my life was very compelling. But my dad was kind of a pioneer in a way, because he was doing this stuff back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s and 80s before it was as widely accepted as it is today. And also, you know, he both had his church, which was, I guess you could say, non-conventional, but he felt, and I felt, that it was a very warm place that people wanted to be, because they saw the evidence of all the things that other churches talk about in action. But then also he branched out and went into the secular world, because he felt like there were a lot of people that would never step foot in the church, and that he wanted to reach them with kind of the message that we're more than just a body. You know, we are a soul that's here for a set of experiences that we go through. And reflecting on that now, I think it's pretty cool.
Well, one thing I would tell you is that I can, I really admire, I got to know your dad a little bit through your writings, and I really wished I had the chance to meet him. So I would say you're very fortunate to have had him in your life. Nobody's perfect, and no dad is perfect, but it sounds like he was a fascinating guy. One thing I would also say too is that when I'll do readings, in a public place, I usually don't want to see who I'm reading necessarily. I'll have an audience in front of me, and I'll just read objects that the people will leave on a table. So, it makes me think. I mean, for me, I always attribute it to psychometry, just being able.
Yeah, that sounds like psychometry in terms of, you know, keying in on that person through the object, I guess, that you touch, huh?
Yeah. You know, another thing, too, is if I do phone readings, sometimes I'll ask people, you know, it's not necessary. When I'm doing a radio reading, I don't need anything. I mean, I can work without it, but if I'm handling a private client, I'll ask them to just send me a note and just write, hi, this is so-and-so, and I'm here, because I'm just looking for something that might allow me to have a small connection in a physical way. And it's just write your name on something and say, hello, I'm so-and-so. Bye.
And, right.
And I kind of cherish her. I like having some, it may be more of a habit. I'm finding, actually, that people, I don't even necessarily need it. I know I don't, because people will just sit in front of me, and it's almost like I forgot to even grab something from them, and I just started talking. Barb.
Yeah. Hey, Mark. You wrote the book Soul Shift, Finding Where the Dead Go. Can you give our listeners kind of a overview of what this book is about?
Sure. Well, it really was keyed by the event that I described earlier, where on January 10th, 2003, I lost my youngest son, Brandon. And that I had been gone the prior week. I got home on a Friday night, and I came home from work, and it was kind of late, and usually on a Friday night, Brandon would be out with his buddy. He was 18 years old at the time, but I was just compelled to go right back to his room, and I opened the door, and he was laying there watching TV, and I gave him a hug, and it just felt really special. And then the next day, we got up, and we're going around, and he had mentioned that he was going to go on a hike with some buddies. And, you know, a lot of parents will worry about different things, but that day I had a particularly strong concern about his hike. And at one point, I was sitting down at my computer, and I felt like this presence around me is the best way to describe it, and a feeling along with that of impending danger to Brandon that could possibly take his life. And then in my pragmatic way, I kind of dismissed it and thought, no, you're just imagining that. But I did, you know, ask him not to go. We had some, it was kind of windy that day, and it, as it turned out, the wind had stirred up pollutants and pushed him into the area where he was, and that was an irritant to his lungs. We didn't know that that was going to be an issue. But when I'd asked him not to go, Brian's last comments to me were, "We're going, Dad," which, you know, most 18-year-old kids are going to do their own thing, and you're not going to stop them. But later that day, we had been gone all day. I got a phone call. It was a distress call from my older son, who had been contacted by some of the boys on the mountain with Brandon, and they said that he was having trouble. He was passing out, so they wanted us to call 911 because their phone call kept dropping because they were in such a remote area. And I finally connected with 911 and asked for them to send help by a helicopter. And by the time we had about a 45-minute drive, we got back up here. We were driving up towards our home, which is near the base of the McDowell Mountains in Scottsdale, Arizona. And we see a helicopter and the fire trucks and police cars and a swarm of people. So my heart just sank. And within about a half hour, we were informed that Brandon had passed, although they didn't know what was wrong and wouldn't really tell us anything. But now by this time, my father had already passed a number of years earlier, so I couldn't really go to him. But I did talk to my uncle, and he said, "Mark, if there's anything I can do for you, let me know." And I said, "Well, if you get anything, any messages or anything that you could share, I'd really appreciate it." And it was about a day or two later that I was at the mortuary, and my uncle called me on my cell phone, and he said, "Mark, you know, I tried really hard last night to connect, but I couldn't get anything. But this morning I got up and did my morning meditation, and your father came to me. And he told me that he was there to meet Brandon when Brandon crossed over, and that Brandon wanted you to know that you're the best parents he ever could have had. But in addition to that, which is something you like to hear, he also told us the cause of death before the autopsy was even done and before we had any clue. And he had said that your dad said that Brandon's death was caused by a lack of oxygen that caused his heart to fail, a lack of blood oxygen. And so it was about 3 days later I talked to the autopsy physician, and she said that he had apparently suffered a severe asthma attack that caused his blood oxygen levels to drop to the point of causing cardiac arrest. So the description was right on. And from that point, that kind of keyed me into writing about that and then other experiences that were happening and just reflecting on Brandon's life, and because it was kind of a purging. But then that led to a number of other things, the first of which that I would call a series of synchronicities was my meeting Alison Dubois. Mm-hmm. But the way that happened was kind of off the charts. It was about a month later in February of 2004, and I'm sorry, I think I said Brandon passed in January of 2004. It was 2004, not 2003. So February of 2004, one evening I'm watching the news and I see this clip about a program going on at the University of Arizona where they're studying mediums under controlled conditions, where the mediums can't see the sitter and they're not able to speak with the sitter directly, but a researcher is asking them a series of questions. And the medium used for that was Alison Dubois. And from the clip they showed, I thought, wow, she's really good and she's giving good information. I really would like to meet her. Mm-hmm. And I'd also like to be, you know, go to that lab and be a sitter. Well, the very next day, I get a phone call from someone in Dallas who was a friend of my father's going back to the 70s. And he said, "Mark, I know what you've been through, but I know someone who I think can help you. And her name's Alison Dubois. And here's the information on how to contact her and all that." So I thought that was pretty crazy that came one day after seeing that. And then, you know, it was only a matter of about 10 or 11 months later that I was actually in that lab at the University of Arizona with a different medium, Lori Campbell, mm-hmm. in a similar experiment that was filmed for a Discovery Channel feature.
Don't you think that they're, that Brandon and perhaps your father are pulling some strings? I mean, it's a very silly way to say it, but they're influencing what happens around you. They're going to bat. They're opening doors for you from where they are, don't you think?
Totally. I think a lot of this is orchestrated. Maybe I knew about it before I came here, and I just don't remember, too. I don't know. But I will say that I think there's a bigger plan to this than I was even aware of, and it's unfolding. I continue to meet a variety of people know, and within the book I had more readings, but a lot of it really at the summation, as you know, at the end of the book, I kind of tie it all together and give my personal spin on what I get out of it, why I think we're here and what this life is about, and even why I had to go through this. And as I told you the other day, I felt like if I hadn't gone through this, I wouldn't have been spurred to write this book and share these experiences and open up. I would have continued on a mainstream business path and just been satisfied with worldly accomplishments. But because of this, I've done this work, and it's touched so many people who have lost loved ones, especially people who have lost kids. Because I'm coming from the perspective of a parent who's been through that. So there's no doubt about it. I mean, I've had so many things line up that are just, I almost laugh sometimes.
Well, you know, I think that at our level of consciousness, our day-to-day, you know, we think we have some plans, and, you know, we can follow through on a lot of things, but I think that we all have a higher self, and that higher self comes in with a purpose that maybe we only come to grasp maybe at some point in our life, maybe afterwards in the form of a review.
And right. And I wouldn't disagree with that. I haven't completely define my ideas about how everything works, but that's not, you know, too far from how I see things either.
Well, in reading some of your discussions, like you read a little bit about your father's beliefs, you found a book of his, which I think that's a good story in itself too. You were waiting. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. And what had happened was my dad passed in 1992. Well, fast forward 12 years later, in 2004, someone who knew him came to me and said, "Hey, I've got something for you. This is a book your dad wrote and asked me to keep, you know, and I feel like this is the time that you're supposed to have it." Why they didn't come to me sooner, I have no idea, but apparently they felt compelled at that moment to do that.
That's funny.
2 weeks later, I have that reading with Alison Dubois that I'd mentioned. Mm-hmm. And that ended up being about 8 months after I'd made the appointment. So it was like August of 04. And one of the hits I felt she had that was strongest was she said, "Your father's here. He's showing me a book. I feel it's his book that, you know, but it's for you to take forward. And he's handing it to you, and it's yours to take forward now." Mm-hmm. And that turned out to be just 2 weeks after that I actually received the book. So I knew it was important. And it's really a book about psychic development. And what I felt was the reason that for the delay was the world wasn't really ready for it back in 1973 when he finished it, but it was now. So I took it to my publisher, and they are actually going to publish that book this next spring.
Oh, that's great. That's terrific. By the way, your publishers did do a great job in this. I commend you. You're not a writer by trade, per se. But I, at least as far as I know, but this is a beautifully written book. And
thank you. I learned a lot through the process, and they had a good editor to work with. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty far along on the second one. I think I learned so much on the first that my writing's even better on the second. So
well, I'll be the judge of that. No, I'm kidding.
No, I'll let you be the judge. I'll take constructive criticism too. I'm an egomaniac.
I'm totally teasing you. Well, one thing I think you'll find is psychic ability and writing, developing it is not unlike peeling an onion. You think you're done, you think you've got it, and then lo and behold, another level comes up, and it's a wonderful experience to be able to go through that. Well, so in working with Alison, it was very great. By the way, she did write the foreword to your book, didn't she?
No, she didn't write the foreword. I had actually Patricia Robertson, who is the immediate past president of the SPR in Scotland. The original SPR, the main branch is in London, but there's a Scottish Psychic Research or Society of Psychical Research, and she wrote the foreword. But Alison did write an endorsement. It's a blurb on the book as well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
Okay. And I actually wrote a piece in her book. She gave me 13 pages in her book, We Are Their Heaven, and that actually came out before my book, Soul Shift. So it was kind of a good intro for some people. They read that and then they wanted to read more, so they got Soul Shift and read the whole story.
Well, they sure will. And again, at Soul Shift through Frog Books, up in Berkeley.
It's actually North Atlantic Books out of Berkeley. I'm sorry. Yeah, Frog is the imprint. North Atlantic Books is the publisher, but it's Frog Limited is the imprint.
Huh.
And it's available in many Barnes & Noble stores, online at Amazon. And my website, though, has links to all those things and a synopsis and some videos if people wanted to go there. It's just soulshiftbook.com.
Well, I have to tell you, it must have been very uncomfortable and interesting and fascinating to have a famous psychic as a father. I love the story in it where he basically kind of marries you off during one of his public readings or presentations.
Yeah, that's people love this story. My wife especially. It happened to her. But it was our second date, and we were real young. I mean, this is going back to the late 1970s. And that particular night, I came, as a lot of young guys do, without a lot of plans made for our date. And I said, hey, do you want to go see my father? Here's what he does. And she said, sure. So we get there, and I'm running late. And by the time we get there, he's already well into the demonstration. He's already taped and blindfolded, as I described earlier, and he's answering people's messages. So we sit down. He doesn't know that we've come into the room. And then I encourage her to write a question. So she writes, will my mother ever get married? And apparently her mom, had been divorced for a number of years and was dating a guy, but was kind of noncommittal about that relationship. So that's why she wrote that. So somebody that works there takes the paper up, and within 10 minutes or so, my dad picks up the paper, and he says, Susie Sapp. So, well, her name was Sipe, but he got close, and she goes, it's Sipe. And he said, I think you've asked me about your mother, my dear, and if she's going to get married, but I don't know about that, but I will tell you that you have made your choice of man, and he's with you tonight, and you will get married to him. And then I piped up and said, Dad, it's Mark. Susie's my date. And he said, well, I guess I just married off my own son. And it wasn't too long thereafter. It was probably less than a year and a half later that we got married.
That's pretty funny. It's like, okay, what do you say afterwards? So your dad says we're going to get married. He's a famous psychic. How do you feel about that? I don't know. I haven't made up my mind about you. But that must have caused quite a few interesting conversations between the two of you.
You know, I think we were kind of quiet about it afterwards. I mean, we never forgot it, but it was kind of like added pressure, wait a minute, I just started dating her. but there was a different kind of connection with her than anyone else had ever dated. So he was right. And not to horn in on that, but something I didn't mention in the book was, or I don't know if I did at length, was that he had the ability to, like, people would sometimes send dollar bills up and write down serial numbers, then he'd tell them the serial number, often without unfolding the paper. And there was a gentleman here in the Phoenix area, Tony DePrima, who had a nightclub at one point in time, and he hired my father to work the showroom. And he was a skeptic in the beginning, but then he became convinced. And one of the things that he did and his partners did to try and trick my father was they would take a $20 bill and wrap it in aluminum foil and send it up and then not allow him to unwrap it and see if he could give him the serial number. And he apparently did this on three occasions successfully.
That's just the most amazing thing. I've worked with things in closed envelopes. I've only had a chance to do that a few times. And you have to have a lot of faith. Did your dad work with, did he describe them as guides, or how did he describe his help on the other side?
Well, he had a primary guide, two primary guides, yeah. And he, in addition to that, I think the thing was that made him so effective was he had kind of all the different abilities, clairaudient, clairvoyant, he had mediumship abilities, and I think, what they would call remote viewing today, he was really good at that. So if he got that piece of paper and he's blindfolded, he could probably get information in a visual way from it just like anyone else could without blindfolds. But then in addition to that, through psychometry or whatever, he could probably tune into the person's energy, and then from that, kind of connect to their people on the other side or to, information from his guide. So it was very multifaceted with him.
I have to tell you, Mark, if I had a dad that good at something, I would really hesitate big time to go into anything remotely similar.
I wanted to be my own person, I guess, as an adult, and we all do to some extent. Mm-hmm. Plus, he had a lot of people that were very demanding of his time and energy that, always were after something. And so I saw that aspect, too, and that was pretty demanding on him.
Well, it would almost be like being Eddie Disney or something. You know, it's like, are you ever going to be or Walt Disney Jr.? You know, I mean, what are you going to do? You know?
Well, it's like Edgar Casey's son, you
Oh,
know.
yes.
He probably struggled in his dad's shadow for years, you know. And in his own right, he's probably, and I don't know that much about him, but I imagine he had a lot of his own gifts. They just may have been a little bit different.
Did Mark, did when your son passed, was it a comfort that you knew your dad would be there for him on the other side?
It was, but it's not something I initially thought of until my uncle mentioned it to me. Because when you lose a kid, I mean, for anyone out there who has been through this, it's the most traumatic thing you can imagine. You're not yourself. You're so shook that you're just writhing in pain. So, you know, it takes time to even get to the point where you can digest some of this stuff. But yeah, it was very comforting when my uncle told me that, especially. You know, because I had great trust and belief in my uncle's abilities as well, because his capabilities were quite similar to my father's, and I knew he was the real deal. So, getting that from him meant a lot to me.
It brings up the question, do you think that psychic ability is something that is passed along genetically, or is it something that maybe happens at a soul level where all of you kind of came together? I mean, have you given some thought to that?
Well, you know, the pat answer is that it goes along genetically, and I think there's some evidence to support that because of, you know, it tends to seem to run in family lines, and researchers have found that to be the case. But is that the reason? Is it genetics? Is it some aspect of that, or is there something else happening at another level? And now that you bring that up, I don't know that I know for sure, but I would say that it tends to run in family lines. And if you know what the underlying reason is for that, I don't know that I know for sure.
Well, I've always thought that perhaps, you know, when we're choosing, I tend to believe that we choose our parents. I think that we have some control at a soul level. We're able to come in and say, I'm going to be the son of Mark Ireland because blah, blah, and blah. I need to learn this. I want to do this. And being his son I don't know your wife's name, but between the two of you, they are the ones that would help me learn something. Maybe there's some of that too.
Yeah, and even in my dad's case, I think maybe he was a teacher, and so I was had made some agreement to help facilitate the continuation of what he couldn't finish in some way because of that timing element and other factors. So I think there is definitely a bigger picture to all of this that we don't always see with our tiny minds here, you know. But if we could get out of our own way, and I think, like, just with the psychic thing, I was talking to somebody earlier today whose daughter had a mediumistic thing happen, and she was freaked out by it. And I said, "Well, don't be freaked out. You know, I'd be comforted by that."
Yeah.
But I'm trying to explain, people are so conditioned to think about this world in a tangible way, and they don't realize that
Right.
the way that our brains work and our minds work, the difference between the conscious and the subconscious, there's probably so much information available at the subconscious level, but we tend to filter it out. So I think the development of psychic abilities, in large part, is learning how to remove those barriers and
Right.
preconceived notions so we are allowing the full flow of information to come through from the subconscious to the conscious mind.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I both Mark and I see that with our investigating, haunted environments, that you feel things and you can't explain it. You know, it's you're you have to be open to it. I think everyone has some type of ability, but you have to be open and accepting to it. But the ability is there. You know, and it's just a matter of time. You know, I think things are becoming more open to psychic ability, and people are starting to accept it more.
Well, it's so funny to me too. My father would make this argument. It's like you have the two extremes out there. On one end, you have like the scientism, the materialistic kind of thinking that would poo-poo all this and basically contend that we're nothing but a bunch of chemicals interacting with one another, and our experiences are all caused in the brain. Then you have the other extreme, kind of the fundamentalist religious types, who kind of forget that all these miracle stories are in their scripture,
right,
but yet
right.
they want to call this stuff voodoo, you know?
Yeah.
So it's rather interesting. Yeah. And if they really studied their scripture, they'd see that there's a lot of stories in there to support that this is a valuable thing, and it's a God-given gift that's there to help.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, like what you're saying, I think they don't want to acknowledge that part of our gifts. You know, everyone is given a gift, and psychic ability is definitely a gift. And
my father, I'm sorry.
No, go
my
ahead.
Father
go
felt
ahead.
That there was, if you went back to probably prehistoric man, there was probably more of this as an innate sense
right.
that was just not questioned. It was part of survival, because
yep.
if there was a woolly mammoth around the corner or whatever was alive at the time of, you know, prehistoric man, and you maybe didn't hear it or see it in time, but you had the sixth sense that told you to look out or to duck into a cave, you know,
yep.
that's pretty helpful.
Yeah.
But over time, now we're so desensitized, and, you know, we've got iPods playing all the time, and we're on the computer, and it's always this barrage of information and noise and things to barrage the senses that don't allow us that quiet time where we can get the subtle information and take it in, digest that.
Yeah, I think it's really funny when we go on our ghost investigations and, you know, they bring all this really highly technical equipment and cameras and stuff. Well, it's useful in that it shows other people that don't have psychic ability that something's there. But I just go, I bring Mark, you know, he's all I need. You know,
he's your instrument.
Yeah, he's my instrument. He sees it, he feels it, he hears it, and that's all I need. But anyway, I have a question for you from the chat. Cece wanted to know when, you know, losing your son was definitely a shock, but did this experience actually increase your psychic ability?
Well, I'd say it's a little bit stronger maybe than it was before. I'm just more aware of it. I don't think I was really trying to be aware of it before. So I would say I'm more aware of it, and I've had more instances that I could note that were rather interesting things. But with me, it's not like it's something I'm getting all the time or that I focus on, and I've not really worked to develop it that much. I probably need to dedicate more time to that, but I definitely have noticed more instances where things have surfaced, and I've noted them. I can give you a number of examples. Here's one that's kind of interesting, but a couple years ago, there was a woman. We had gone to a dinner with a bunch of other families who had lost children, and one woman who was there had gone to see the medium George Anderson, who's pretty phenomenal from all accounts that I've heard. So she's talking about her experience there and how much it helped, and then she said that... But as much as that helped, it really bothers her to know that she won't see her son again. And then for whatever reason, I just felt compelled to say, well, just don't think of it like he's not here. Just think of it like he's somewhere like over in Australia or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, that's exactly what George Anderson said.
Interesting.
So I thought, well, maybe her son popped that into my head. I don't know. But it's things like that where it's just a spontaneous thing. And sometimes I'm talking to somebody or like, I just feel like I'm giving them advice, but then it's more profound than I realize.
Well, that's big, you know, you bring it up in the book and I mean, the idea that how much of our consciousness is really connected to our physical brain. I'd say that, you know, our brains are wonderful receivers and that maybe we're able to do some basic processing, but to think that there is nothing else coming to us from a higher source or higher sources, I think is a little closed-minded. And I mean, how can, there's just no way that answer doesn't explain so many things.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like the one example I give is, you know, the near-death experiences, especially the extreme ones, like the Pam Reynolds case, where you've got this woman who had a brain aneurysm that required a special operation where they chilled her body down to, I think, about 60 degrees Fahrenheit, removed all the blood from her brain and body and stopped her heart for 45 minutes. And during that time, she, you know, some things took place. And then when they put her blood back in and warmed her back up, started her heart and revived her, She reported things that had happened that were verifiable, very specific things that had happened within in that room during the time where her heart was stopped and there was no brainstem activity. So you have to question that. How would she be able to get that information if her brain was not functioning during that time?
Well, there's this Hawaiian belief system. What is the name of the book again? It's Joe Vitale wrote it, and basically Ho'oponopono, and I think that's the way it's pronounced. I don't know if I can spell it for you, but if you look up Joe Vitale on Ho'oponopono, the author or the person that he's writing about makes the case that the things that we remember tend to be problems and things we're trying to overcome, but in so much of our, let me restate that. The things that we think about and come into our mind are either experiences or inspiration.
Excuse me.
Nothing like a big cough for the radio. In any case, the idea that he forwards and this the Hawaiian mystic in this book, this doctor, he's actually more than that, basically feels that we receive inspiration all the time, and it is from a higher source. It's from universal energy. It's from loved ones. It's from a number of sources who are trying to assist us on the other side, and that's something I'm always trying to let people know, that there is a very active world on the other side. There is another side, and that what we do here matters, and that people, we can receive help from the other side, much the way you have in putting together this book. One of the things I wanted to mention, too, is that it seems that your son, Brandon, and he's around, and we'll say that he's here, and he's probably listening tonight. Hello, Brandon, because I believe he is. Brandon has used music to communicate with you a number of ways. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, one of the things that people learn after losing somebody is they're going to get signs if they pay attention, and they can come in a variety of ways. One with Brandon is that I feel has been pretty compelling is songs that would be played at certain times that you knew that was his favorite band or whatever. You get in the car at a certain moment or whatever, and in his case, Pink Floyd was his favorite. There were some other bands, too, that he liked a lot. But you'd hear a song by them at some moment or whatever. One of the wildest ones, though, was within, I think, a week or two of his passing. My older son, Stephen, had moved back home to be with us after his brother had passed, which was kind of for all of our benefit. Mm-hmm. One particular night, though, he had gone to bed, and he dreamed that the electricity went out. Now, we hadn't had a power outage in about a year and a half or 2 years. But he dreamed the power was going out, and then he saw a flashing, you know, 12:00 on this alarm clock. And in the middle of the night after that, the power actually did go off. And when it came back on, the stereo in the other room was blasting a song by Iron Maiden, which is another one of Brandon's favorite songs or bands. Mm-hmm. And the odd thing was that stereo system wasn't in the on position, so there was no reason for it to come on. So those are a couple examples with music. And then just even with me, I guess you're probably talking more about the chapter having to deal with the song that was channeled, or we feel was channeled through a friend. Mm-hmm. So we had gone on a cruise with our son Steven and Brandon's best friend, Stu. And Stu and Steven were also friends, so it was a good time. We were gone for about a week. The day that we got back, we're sitting at the foot. My wife was sitting at the foot of our bed, and I was at the other end of the house, and so was Stephen. And while I was out of the room, she felt Brandon's presence. And then after that, she saw him as a shadow figure out of her peripheral vision. So she was really excited by this, and she ended up, wanting to capture the moment and really make it last. And she wanted to turn off the TV and all these other things, but she somehow intuitively felt like if she did that, she'd lose him. And then I walked in the room and started talking, and it kind of stopped at that point. But she told me about it, not then because she didn't want to make me feel bad, but the next day. But interestingly, after she had told me, we then got a phone call from a man named James Linton. Now, James Linton is a musician friend who we met because, and it took about a month after Brandon's passing before we met him, but we found out he was a hiker who was with a group that was following Brandon's group, and he got to Brandon when Brandon was unconscious and he tried to help, but it was too late. And at the time, he didn't understand his role in all this, and he's like crying out to God saying, why didn't you let me help this kid? You know, I got here. I don't understand why I'm here. Well, anyhow, back to Susie's event with, you know, having the vision of Brandon. And then the next day, so James calls us, and he says, Susie, I've got something to tell you, but I don't know how to tell you. And she said, well, it's okay, James, just tell me. And he said, well, I was recording some music today, and while I was doing this, I felt the presence of somebody else in there with me. And I saw a shadow figure out of my peripheral vision. And then I saw white light flashes in front of me. And I just kind of dismissed it at first. And I went to drink some water. And then I took a shower and I got some food. But every time I came back, I kept having this experience. And then as it went on, I just felt like there was somebody else there. And I finally said, okay, Brandon, I know you're here. What do you want? And then at that point, he kind of relinquished control and retooled the song he was working on and crafted a song that is called The Other Side. And he, at the end of this, he said, this is the best song I've ever written, but I didn't write it. And he said, this is a gift for you from Brandon.
That's powerful.
And if someone wants to hear the song, I know James is trying to make it available. He had it on iTunes for a while. It's not there now. But if you go to my website, soulshiftbook.com, you go to the contact page, and then on that page, linked to my MySpace page, you'll see a player on the left side where I've got some interviews. But that song is also on there, and you can play that song right there on my MySpace page.
Well, I'm going to do that. I mean, I didn't even realize that, and I would love to. Just so you know, Mark, I've had a lot of experiences, Barbara and I both, with spirit manipulating electrical equipment and devices in order to get our attention.
Right.
And it happens, it's happened frequently. We have gone out with a couple of real good friends of ours, Joe and Becky Mendoza, 3 a.m. Paranormal, and spirit is able to, they have this thing, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, I'm not sure if you're that aware of it, it's called a Frank's Box, where this device basically, I think it's shortwave or AM.
It's scanned.
Basically, it you know, where when you and I turn on a radio, we want to listen to a station, and we'll turn to that station. Well, this device is set up to constantly roll across frequencies, and what happens is when a spirit wants to speak up, it'll pull a word like off of anything being said. And while it sounds very random and kind of, it's hard to listen to because there's a lot of static, some of the answers that come out are just dead on the spot answers to questions. So you might say, hello, I'm, do you know who's here? And then we'll hear a lot of, you know, hissing and sputtering, and then you'll hear Barbara. And then you'll hear Mark, and we've had that happen in
wow.
in recent investigations. And then, like we were at a hospital, and Barbara and I, again, it's called a Frank's Box, and it's very interesting, where we're saying, okay, we got to go. All right, Spirit, if you're here, we're going. Goodbye, goodbye. And then you hear a lot of hissing and sputtering, and then you hear this,
goodbye.
Goodbye. And it was just like, wow. All right, I mean,
it was a nerd.
The Frank's Box... I mean, sometimes it feels like a kind of an annoying way to get somewhere, but then it hits you in the head with these big hits. I mean, these big responses that clearly it's a response, goodbye, and just, wow, what are the odds? It's incalculable, and it's just ridiculous.
Back in Thomas Edison's day, he wanted to invent some sort of machine that he felt like could provide communication between realms, if it was possible to do. Now, obviously, he didn't finish that project before his passing, but it was kind of an interesting idea, and this sounds almost like a variation on the theme.
Well, there's some really interesting people working with the electronic media, and I can tell you just from my own investigations that spirit seems capable, and I would call spirit beings, conscious beings on the other side. However, I mean, they're no longer on a physical plane, but it doesn't mean that their minds are turned off. It's anything but. If you accept certain... beliefs about subatomic particles, that we are all at our very essence energy. the idea that energy can affect other energy is not implausible to me. And then when we've, Barbara and I and so many other people have had experiences that just, there's no denying that this is too random. It's, there's no way it would respond in with clear answers, ask, you know, and all of that. So I guess I'm getting back to the idea that Brandon is standing there, you know, playing with the radio, saying, "Mom, Dad, I'm okay, I'm here." And more to the point, maybe I'm in the house. I'm with you. I'm aware that, you know, I'm here. If you say hello to me, I've told this to many people that if you want to say, people have come to me and said, you know, I just want to tell them that I love them and that I'm thinking of them. And I have to invariably say, you just did.
Right. And I don't think you even have to say it audibly. You just think it, you know.
Of course.
In that realm, it's probably more those who are there are probably communicating more telepathically, I would imagine, than through. They're not going to have, well, maybe they do if their plane is also physical in nature, but I don't know that that's necessary.
Well, I just, as a little later in the show, I wanted to let everybody know that we're going to have a friend of ours, Terry Daniel, who has basically, would you call her the founder of the new Afterlife Conference, Afterlife Awareness Conference that's coming up? I don't know.
I think we're putting together a foundation named the Afterlife Education Foundation, and then the conference that we're putting together is the Afterlife Awareness Conference. And it's really geared to provide, you know, information from a broad array of disciplines and evidence across the board for the afterlife. And, you know, I guess it's aimed primarily at bereaved people, but not necessarily exclusively that. Anyone who's interested in those phenomena, ranging from mediumship to near-death experience to ADCs, after-death communications, the kind of things you're talking about, you know, with electronics and or other sorts of things. And people who are providing, you know, historical evidence going back over 100 years conducted by the SPR and things like that.
SPR, but what's the SPR?
The Society of Psychical Research. It's really the oldest recognized institution that investigated initially mediumship and evidence for the afterlife or just paranormal things in general, unexplained phenomena. So they are still around. They were founded in the late 1800s, and some highly respected scientists were part of that. And then William James, who was an American, founded an American branch of that, and he investigated one of the most documented and respected mediums of all time, Mrs. Piper. So that's what the SPR is. There are other organizations doing similar work now, but not that many of them. You still find mainstream science shies away from this, kind of poo-poos it. So I'm proud of those people who still do this work because I think it's very valuable. And I think materialism in and of itself has not helped humankind progress, and it's been a deterrent. But I think people are getting to the point where maybe through all the things that we've had happen, socioeconomically and with, you know, the recession, people have to lean on each other a little bit more, and I think maybe it's rekindled interest in the spiritual side of life.
I would tell you, too, that I've been laid off from my job. I'm one of many, many millions of people in this country who has experienced that, and I've gone through it more than once, and I can tell you that while it feels terribly much like a curse, if you can get through it without, you know, losing everything you own, it can sometimes afford you the chance to focus on the fact that there is help out there, that there are ways. I mean, I remember we went through a tough time where I was trying to. It was kind of a psychic experience where I wanted to come back to Los Angeles. We were trying to restart our lives out here again because we had so much family here. We were living in the Midwest. And I was looking for some inspiration, and I remember going through, you know, we're trying to, you know, sort out our stuff. I remember going through the basement, and it's almost as if someone threw it in my lap was this folder for a company that I had seen a presentation by the founder of the company. Well, I reached out to that guy, and that was Barbara, the Kern Organization. I was looking for a job. I'm a writer. I'm a copywriter by trade. I like to play with words when I'm not helping people psychically. And I can tell you, Mark, that it's almost as if some spirit, like in all of the crap in our old basement in Ohio, threw this folder out and said, why don't you look at this again? And it came out, and it was just like, wow, all right. I did, and that was the job I got out here. And that was a huge turning point in our lives, and it made a big difference. So the idea that people think that our loved ones on the other side are powerless, are unable to communicate, is a falsehood by any stretch of the imagination.
It's the story that you just told me keyed me to something that just happened recently that was kind of interesting. With a medium friend of mine, Deborah Martin, had called me kind of out of the blue one day, and she was aware of this book of my father's that I was about to get published. And she said, Mark, your father is telling me this is a sacred book. I said, well, I believe that. I know that. And she goes, no, you don't understand. You know, and basically what she was saying is it has to be conveyed to the reader of this because it's a training guide for psychic and mediumship development. Mm-hmm. That this is not something to be taken lightly. And I said, well, I'm going to write a foreword that explains that expressly. And interestingly, there were a couple of points that I spelled out in what I'd already written, and then I shared them with her. And then she got the same exact information psychically from what I had written. And so it was kind of interesting. And then within a few days, I actually was going through some of my dad's old papers, and I find this one sheet, and then it says, to the would-be medium. And this one pager basically lays out exactly what I felt he would want said. So I sent that to the publisher, and I said, this needs to be a preface in the book. So that was really wild. And he was basically talking about the responsibility of the gift, and that it's not to be taken on to boost one's ego or to be used for the wrong reasons, but it needs to be used as a gift to help people, and you need to approach it the right way, essentially was what it was trying to say. But it was so ironic to find that page just days after I was getting these messages about making sure that people understood that what he was trying to do with that book was a sacred matter.
Well, this work is it's sacred to me, and it's that important. I would also tell you that if you're truly tapping in and you recognize that you're tapping in, for you to let your ego get in the way, I think you are asking for an operator to disconnect you. to use an AT&T version of it. I mean, if anything, it just keeps me very alert and aware of the fact that and I've said this, you know, out when I'm at making a presentation, that without the help of my friends, my family, my loved ones, friends of whoever it is that is there to speak to me, I'm just a guy with a dumb look in my face unless someone is assisting me. God help me. I mean, I just know that I wouldn't be of much use if I wasn't being provided insights and information from the people who are kind enough to come see me and hopeful enough that their loved ones will reach out.
And you probably learn to trust that, and that's probably a big differentiating factor, huh?
It's everything, Mark. I mean, anyone who's listening, I would say, I mean, this is a big part of my book. If you don't trust what you hear, you might as well give it up. I mean, it takes practice, and it's something to aspire to. It's something to work at. Because some of the information you get may seem to be irrelevant, unimportant, obtuse, but it may be just the thing that person who is your sitter needs to hear. Just because you don't get it doesn't mean it's not terribly important.
Yeah, sometimes it's the craziest stuff that really hits home, because the affirmations that stick out are the ones that are unique. It's not like, oh, they love you very much, or, you know, something very basic or general. It's, you know, why did you put that $5 bill under a pillow?
Well, you know what I would say, too, is, Mark, you've been at family reunions. You know, a certain part of it is, oh, I'm happy to see you. I love you. And then,
sure.
I mean, you can't, I mean, I see it enough that I can't dismiss it. And I know you don't either. But then you get into some things that I have no business knowing. And it's not really for me. It's completely for the person who's there. You know, odd things. I mean, I could just had a guy, you know, come see me, and it was about, I saw him carrying out boxes out of a room with white walls and big windows in the front of the room. And that just was really powerfully important to him because it had to do with the state of his marriage. And I unwittingly described part of his home. And I don't want to go into any more, but it just what might seem a little strange matters. Or,
right.
You know, another guy telling me that I had a piece of bone removed from below my left knee, right knee. I can't believe, remember exactly which. This guy had been in a war and had an injury that caused him to lose part of his bone below his knee. Not his leg, but it's like it shortened his leg.
Wow.
And that made all the difference. And it sounds like I'm just saying gobbledygook. I don't know what that means. I mean, I wouldn't even know where to start with that.
And when you give the message of love from the deceased loved one along with that, then it really is impactful, you know.
Well, that's the thing. Is like and anyone who is looking for a psychic, make sure that they. I really highly believe in getting some evidential information. While they, you know, it's very true that your loved one on the other side is going to have a message of love, support, because that's a natural part of being human and wanting to tell someone how you care. But then there is the other thing. By the way, here's something you wouldn't know. You, Mr. Psychic Medium or Miss Psychic Medium, pass it along. That changes, that elevates everything. That makes it unforgettable and important.
Yeah, and I do encourage people to go to someone who's recommended by people they know and trust or some source that qualifies the mediums like the Winbridge Institute. Because there are people out there that, I think there's a wide range of people that aren't as gifted, maybe not ready for, you know, to take on the responsibility of delivering, you know, a quality medium to a bereaved person. It can be a setback if it's not a good rating. And there are outright frauds, too. You know, there are some people that are looking to take people's money. So I think it's important to go to somebody who's qualified. And I think the best way is, you know, people that you know or trust, if they've had a really good experience with somebody, and if not, I'm recommending them all the time to people just because of that. People read my book and then they want to get a reading. And I'm really cautious. There's a few people that I really know well and trust. And I think it's just important. I think it's better if someone loses somebody and they're grieving, it's better to have no reading than a bad reading. But a good reading can be very healing.
Well, I completely agree. I mean, I've had enough clients that have come to me with crazy tales. I mean, it sounds right out of a bad B movie, you know, where someone, I still remember this lady, you know, she was living in a trailer with no heat and no electrical, and she had just given away like her last $4,000 to someone who was telling her that your mother is very angry, or I forget the bogus story connected to it, but if you give me all of this, I can help correct your life.
Yeah, well, if you believe in karma like I do, I wouldn't want to be that woman.
No. The person who stole that very vulnerable person's money is going to get it back to taken from her triple. I mean, I still do feel that eventually we all have a chance to honestly evaluate our behavior and actions in this life, and that's going to be something that will be held, that's going to be hard to wiggle your way out of. That kind of thing.
Well, and when she experiences the pain that she inflicted on that person in a very direct way, is how I think that experience happens. You know, that's that's the closest thing to hell you'd ever want to have happen to you. Because I think that is kind of the equivalent of a hell.
Well, one
but
thing.
Conversely, I was just going to say someone who does the other, who gives out of their heart and reaches out to help other people and tries to do the right thing. You know, the good karma goes the other way too. So,
I agree. I totally agree. And it isn't always it would be very convenient if karma was instant, but it doesn't seem to always work that way. But I trust. So,
despite John Lennon's song,
great song.
I love him.
My favorite song of all time is Imagine.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a darn good one. Yeah, well, Mark, one of the other things you've had the privilege is that you've had a chance, if through your dad and through your own experiences, to your dad and you have come in contact with some very interesting people. Some of them in the Phoenix area, others who have passed through your dad's life, your book, and your book. And again, everyone, please read it. It's very accessible. It's very understandable. And it's I found it very important. Your dad, you mentioned in the book that your dad had some contact with Bishop James Pike of the Episcopal Church, I believe it was.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I don't have a whole lot of detail about this, but I do recall my father talking about Bishop Pike, and I don't know how many people know about him. He was almost like a precursor to today's John Shelby Spong. If you've read any of his books, they're very good. He's basically into biblical scholarship, but in a way where he's looking at things from a more historical perspective and not taking things so literally, and looking at, I guess, the Bible and things in a different light. And Bishop Pike was doing a lot of research on Jesus' life, and he had gone over to the Holy Land, and apparently during this trip his car stalled and he ended up walking in the dark for help, and he walked off of the edge of a cliff and his body wasn't found for a period of time. But prior to that trip, my father had told me that he had implied that he had maybe been invited to go along on this thing, and I can't really validate if that's exactly the situation, but that was rather interesting. I do have a letter from Bishop Pike to my father before so I do know that they were in contact in some way. But Bishop Pike wrote a number of books, and he's a very interesting man and kind of, I guess you'd call him a cutting-edge liberal within the greater Christian community of the day.
Your dad also dealt with or was in touch with a Hawaiian holy man by the name of Daddy Bray.
Yeah, it's interesting. With all these old transcripts I have from my father's church from different things, there was I have a transcript somewhere. I've got to pull it out from Daddy Bray, and I drew on that to put that information in the book. About Hawaiian religion, which you had touched on earlier, that was rather interesting. And what I find interesting is just the commonality of many of the indigenous faiths, Native American faith too. And it's a very basic but sound faith, you know, and there are a lot of commonalities into it, that the recognition of there being a spiritual realm and the value of the earth and taking care of the planet and the environment, and that, you know, that all living things have souls, animals, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And my father, I don't know who he was associated with in Hawaii, but I guess he had earned status with certain people over there to be called the Great White Kahuna, because the kahuna is like a Hawaiian holy man. So he had actually been accepted by the Native Hawaiian people in that way, which I thought was really cool.
Well, there was a number of really fascinating observations that from the book. I mean, I guess according to Daddy Bray, kahunas act as a human bridge between the physical and spiritual worlds, much like spiritualist mediums. He says kahunas also taught us humans to see God as a person in their inner mind, and that God still, while is can be personified, is present in all living things.
Right. And, you know, I think Western religion is more focused on the idea of God, the man on the throne in the sky. And so from what I read there, I took it like, well, for the human perspective, it's helpful for the human to be able to visualize a God that is a person, but God is much more than that. And it can be, in a way, with, you know, idolatry, I guess, to think about looking at God as like a person, if you were to have like a picture or some representation that way. But I guess to personify God in a way in your mind helps you connect to something you could maybe understand or conceptualize. But at the same time, I would tend to agree with that, because I think God is universal and is in everything, and all things are interconnected in a way.
I think that God, the God force, universal energy, I it's easy for me to, I mean, I was raised Catholic, Barbara and I both were, to see God as an individual, but, you know, as I've learned, I really do see God in all things. I mean, I love taking a walk in the woods. Barbara jokingly calls me the tree hugger.
and that's I love a, trees.
I love trees. I like walking by big old pine trees and feeling the roughness and the bark and wondering how old and how big and how alive they are. All right, I admit it. I've told thousands of people. I like to touch trees. That doesn't make me weird.
And don't you sometimes, when you're with somebody, all of a sudden you really, really like them and you see the God in them. There's like a sparkle in their eye. And you think, God, I just sensed a little bit of God poking through this person, you know?
Yep, and maybe the person that you may not be your favorite person, but sometimes they will surprise you.
Yeah.
And I do see God. I mean, what I love, the reason why I brought that up is because I really do see that it's so important. I mean, to do this work, Mark, you have to recognize the connection between all of us. That's how we can kind of look into each other's minds and provide help and support and messages.
Right, and I think I even pointed out for those that are more science-minded, the principle of entanglement in quantum physics, mm-hmm. which has proven that two particles that have ever come into contact, once separated, will instantaneously react to the other, even if they were separated by the entire distance of the physical universe. So that kind of defies Einstein's theory of relativity, at least as we know it. So that's kind of a wild concept to think about. It does point to that interconnectedness, and that we're just talking about two physical particles.
Right.
So what's beyond that?
Why do you think, and if you think back on, you know, what your father did for many people, why do you think people turn to psychics? They usually turn to psychics at their most desperate time, as a last resort, and after any, you know, medical, you know, physical thing doesn't help them, they turn to psychics for help. Why do you think that is?
Well, I guess there's a number of different reasons, but one might be that they haven't trusted their own inner guidance, or they haven't listened to that, and they've maybe gone on the wrong path or whatever, and gotten off of their path, so they're looking for something to give them guidance, and they're not finding it within, which probably they should. So I think psychics can be helpful in a consultative way, but they could also become a crutch for someone who is not facing their life challenges and dealing with those things themselves. So I think there's a fine line there between when someone would want to consult a psychic for the right reasons, and when they come back again and again and they're looking for someone to tell them the answer, to tell them what to do, when really part of, I think, main reason for being here is it's experiential in nature. So it's up to us to make decisions and to live life and experience those things. And we tend to, a lot of folks tend to want to have an easier path or fewer obstacles, and those are the very things that help us grow, as uncomfortable as they may be.
I wanted to invite people, if someone has a question for Mark, I'm not reading it, I'll do a little reading later, but if someone would like to call in with a question for Mark or myself, it's 818-574-8412, 818-574-8412. Mark, if we do get a call in, I may put you briefly on hold, and then we'll reconnect you. And also, too, in a little while, we're going to call Terry Daniels. So, Barb, you have that number handy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll call her because one of the things I am I'm looking forward to, Mark, is getting a chance. I mean, you're not that far away, and hopefully you'll get a chance to come out to California. I know we're going to end up in Arizona at some point. I'm looking forward to this conference because it's going to be a chance for us to meet a lot of people that I think we can assist that through your book is going to be, I think, providing a lot of comfort to people. I understand you're going to be working with a psychic medium, a lady, I can't remember her name, but I think she'll be there, and I'm looking forward to this too. So between just us, and then there's a number of other really wonderful elevated souls, I think, that will be there. And you know, you're a friend of Anne and Herb Puryear's too, aren't you?
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting. I just recently connected with them, and I had heard of them before, and their church called the Logo Center. Mm-hmm. But they're wonderful people, and Herb apparently has written a number of books going back quite a few years on psychic phenomena. He's a well-educated man and has done a really good job with that work.
Well, I've had a chance to read twice at their church out in Scottsdale, and it's just for me, it's like I've almost kind of shied away from traditional churches because I always feel like I'm being judged for even considering the idea that God might be still willing to speak to us, you know.
Right. And was the vibe there a little bit different?
Mark, I felt like I was home when I walked in that place. My work is here. Barbara and I are both here, but we had a wonderful experience, and we met a lot of very, very sharp people. So the idea that we're going to meet more, and certainly I'm looking forward to meeting you, and it'll be... I feel like Ann and Herb Perrier in some ways are like the mom and my other mom and dad almost, you know what I mean? I just feel that way.
You know what I noticed going there? Everyone was so spiritually uplifting. It was so, you were surrounded by positive energy. And, you know, Mark and I work in both, you know, very competitive fields, as you do. And, you know, people are like, you're always like on guard for people vying for your position or, you know, do you trust the client and watching your back. And here we go into this environment where you can be totally yourself. You can be open. People don't want anything out of you. They just want to be friendly and they just want to be open and loving. And it was such a change for us. It was wonderful.
When did you end up going there?
We were there, I think it was last February.
Yeah. Okay.
And so we've made two trips so far, and I've had a chance. And both times I went there, I was really lucky, Mark. I had, you know, they booked me wall to wall. It was almost like kind of being a chocoholic stuck at Willy Wonka's. I don't know. It was just too much, too good. It was wonderful. I had a blast, and it was very interesting. But, I just thought it was a wonderful experience. Barb, what? Let's see.
I had a question.
Okay, we have a question.
Wait a second. Cece wanted to. Okay. Cece wants to know, has the process and acceptance of reading changed since your father has done psychic readings? Has anything changed since then?
You mean in terms of the process that mediums use?
Yes, and like gallery readings of today. I mean, how has the process changed?
Well, I guess that has changed from, I mean, in a way my father did gallery readings, but, you know, they were with the blindfolds and tape on and using, you know, handwritten messages. But the information he would give was high quality, and I think there are mediums that do that today that do a high quality job, but they don't necessarily need or feel the need to use the blindfold and tapes and things like that. I think the other thing is you found, my father's day, there were a lot more trance mediums, deep trance mediums, and he had that gift as well. So I've got a lot of transcribed teachings that go back, you know, they're recorded over a 30-year stretch of him in a deep trance state. So that was much more common then. You don't find a lot of deep trance mediums today. I mean, you think of the word channeling, and I guess... Mm-hmm. There are different levels of channeling. Somebody's maybe semi-conscious, and then, you know, what we would call deep trance in the old days would be, like, you know, completely removed from the equation. So I think that's a differentiator. Most mediums today that I'm aware of, the ones I've met, they're totally conscious, and they're just talking to you just like we are right now, but they're getting the information, they're sharing it that way.
Well... we just did an event, we did an investigation up in Northern California, and sometimes when I'm getting a spirit, I also channel, at a certain point, some spirit I can say, oh, he said, she said this, she said that, she said, and then I said, I'm going to switch to first person, it's simpler.
Can I tell the story? Okay, well, okay, we were at, there's this... house up in Clovis, California, which is the Wolf Manor. We just went there. It's been on like a couple of the Ghost Hunter shows, Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures. I mean, it's definitely got a lot of spiritual activity. It was used as a sanitarium in the area. So there was a lot of there were a lot of souls that were hurting, that were still there, didn't want to leave, couldn't leave. And so they put Mark in a room where they knew there were definite spirits. And so he laid on one of the gurneys and started channeling this one spirit. I felt so bad for William. He was a vet that was there, and he had an injury that caused his death, and they didn't really take care of him, so that he got an infection, and then he died. But anyway, while Mark was channeling him, and we filmed it, we had a camera on him, he didn't realize it, but his voice started changing to like kind of a southern accent, like he was from, you know, Kentucky, Louisiana. He didn't realize he was doing that till we played it later. And we filmed it with an infrared camera, and you could see right next to him there was a like an orb, a ball of light that went from the top of your head, and it just like it transferred down. You could see it, and then it faded right when he was channeling. And I told him afterwards, I said, Mark, did you realize your voice was changing? You were like talking like you were from the South. So, I mean, I definitely believe there are people just like your father. I think, you know, when they get into a deep state of meditation, they, you know, these spirits can actually come through them.
Right. That's really interesting and intriguing. When you encounter a spirit like that, that I guess you would call earthbound,
yes,
what do you feel is holding them back? Is it their own consciousness or their own unawareness that they have actually passed, or their own unawareness that they can go on to another realm?
I think it's a lot of, you know, Mark, I think about all of the reasons why people do things that harm themselves here with physical bodies. I think that often it's ego. I think it's fear. I mean, I've had it with this guy, my experience with him and watching it again. I mean, I don't always remember everything I'm saying. I remember some of it. I'm kind of like, I almost feel like I'm sitting in the corner of the room watching. But what I felt was, is that he felt abandoned by his family, and that he felt more connected to the men who he was sitting in this room with in the last probably years of his life than with any blood relatives. And so while many of them passed and died, it was kind of a sad home situation where people basically were sent there to die. If you took some time, you got to know the man or all the men, all six men in the room with you, because you had nothing else to do but talk. And I do think that these spirits became somewhat bound to each other, as almost like, I'm not going without you. And that's what it felt like. I mean, I do treat this as a sacred commitment to pass along what I think is true and right. And I felt like with these people in this particular situation, they spent a long time with only their company, and that perhaps they didn't want to go, and perhaps they had nowhere else, no one came to visit them. That's what I got from this guy. And that they were felt like, why go anywhere else? There's no family. And what I have found when I try to cross people over, when I have crossed spirit over, that it helps if they feel like there's someone on the other side who loves them, who cares for them, who is waiting for them. Family members, people who, relatives, friends. And also to the idea that judgment seems to come up quite a bit. Where, you know, it's like I've had people who have had, you might say, made some very bad and harmful decisions to other people. And those people are afraid of judgment. And then on the flip side, I've had people who ran the show. You know, they were celebrities. They were important people. And they didn't want to leave because they were not done standing on the stage. They were not done having everyone run to do their bidding.
Yeah.
And that's come through where, you know, important people, it's like, I built this, I'm not leaving. And they get confused. And I also, one thing too about this place, Mark, where we were, is there was a lot of mental illness. And so I think that if you say, I think that if you pass in a state of mental unclarity or a lack of mental, if there's insanity surrounding you, your passing, that you may not be in the best position to recognize, okay, I have an opportunity to move on from here.
Right.
So,
those are good answers.
Well, you know, Barbara.
Well, William was an interesting spirit because he didn't want to leave because he had he named other people that were there with him. Mark had gotten several names of his buddies, other veterans, and he didn't want to leave them. So he wanted to stay with them. As long as they were there, he was going to stay there. So there was a group of them that were there, and they felt they had nowhere else to go, because we actually did try to cross them over. We have done that on several occasions, like on the Queen Mary, where we have crossed over. Yeah. But they did not want to go. They were bound there. It was their choice, and, you know, it was really sad. I want to go back there because I have a feeling we can maybe convince one of them to go, and then the rest will go too.
Well, you did what you could.
Yeah, I did. Well, I do like to focus on the people who are here and the people that they have lost, and that's first and foremost. I just kind of found my way being pulled into this other area. But it's still important, if you believe that a conscious being is still a being worth hearing about on the other side, even if you don't know them so well. Their pain, their suffering, what they're going through still matters. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Actually, I'd love to give Terry a call and talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing. Can I put you on hold for a second, Mark?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, then we'll get a hold of Terry and get us all together to talk about what's coming up and talk more about you.
Let me see if I can't just add her in.
Barb might be very slick here and just call her in while we're both on the phone.
Yeah.
That works too.
And that's what she's doing.
Hello,
Terry. It's Mark Nelson. You're on the air. You're on the air with me and Mark Ireland.
Hi, Mark. My two favorite Marks.
How are you doing?
How are you doing? Good. Good to be here. Hi. I've been listening for the last 40 minutes or so. Great conversation.
Well, we tried to. We're looking forward a little bit more, and we wanted to talk. I'm really looking forward to, I mean, Terry, we've had a chance. We've been on a show before, and I have just finished Mark's book. I loved your book. It's such a privilege to have the both of you on the show, and I'm also so excited about what we're going to be doing in April at the Afterlife Awareness Conference. Can you talk a little bit about that and tell people about it?
Sure. Well, we're not officially announcing it yet, but a few hundred people know, maybe a few thousand. It's
now,
going to be in Phoenix. Well, now a few more thousand, we hope. It's going to be in Phoenix, April 29th through May 1st. We've got incredible speakers who, to anybody who is familiar with this work, these names will be familiar. Two of them are Mark Nelson and Mark Ireland. Hold on, I'm looking at the list here. Give me a second. Let's see, who do we have? We have Bill Guggenheim, who wrote Hello from Heaven. A lot of people know him. Boyce Beatty and Louis LeGrand from the Association of, oh my goodness, I'm not going to remember the name of it, but a real well-known afterlife research group on the East Coast. Mitch Carmody, who does a lot of work with the bereaved, he's well-known on the Compassionate Friends circuit. Carla Blowy, who was the editor of... can't think of the name of the magazine. Boy, you caught me stumped without all this information in front of me. Anyway, we've got great people. And we also have a Facebook page that people can go on to get updates because we haven't finalized everything yet.
Well, I happen to have your email in front of me. Shall I read?
Sure. You've got more information in front of you than I do.
That's okay. You live it, and I just happen to have it in front of me.
Okay.
We have the keynote speaker, PMH Atwater. Fascinating person. She's been at this for, almost over 30 years now, near-death experiences. We have the lovely and talented Terry Daniel, who's going to talk about afterlife communication. You have a wonderful book in your own right. There's this guy, Mark Nelson. And then we're going to go on to Louis LeGrand, Carla Blowey. Also, too, there's someone I wasn't aware of, R. Craig Hogan.
Yes. He's new because you've been kind of out of our communication loop because the Yahoo thing got sort of messed up. But he is he's working with Rochelle Wright, and the two of them have a process that they do that is sort of a guided after-death communication. They have a name for it. You probably have it there right in front of you in Rochelle's thing.
Yes.
Where they work with rooms full of people and will lead you on a guided journey to make contact.
That's going to be fascinating. I mean, in my own when I talk to people about meditation, I always feel like from meditation there's visualization. I do see a direct connection to where you start out just trying to clear your mind, and then you put it out there that you're here to speak to people if they will come and visit you. And the meditation visualization is an important part of this for me. And then Mark's book, Mark, you'll be speaking, and I think that people are going to get a real kick out of what you've had to say. Hopefully they're enjoying, I think that they're enjoying our show tonight.
Yeah, I hope that they do. And my session, I'm going to, you know, where we have other people speaking about the science of the investigations of mediumship from the science perspective and the history of that, mine's going to be more like personal stories and things that I've observed, as well as working with Deborah Martin, who's a phenomenal medium, and she'll share some of her experiences and her practice. And at the end, she'll be sharing some messages with the workshop group that I have as well. And then there's a documentary on my story, or largely based on my story, that was just completed by a couple of Arizona State journalism students that they had sent it in and won, an award in the Telly Awards, which are similar to the Emmys, but for documentaries. And so that hasn't been formally announced yet, but we'll be, I believe, showing that too. At least that was what Terry was trying to pull together. So that'll be
Yeah, we're going
to
have that. That'll be on great. Saturday night. That'll be our movie.
Oh, wow.
We're going to try and play the song The Other Side as well, which I'd mentioned earlier. So.
Well, Terry, where can people learn more about the conference?
Well, the best place to go right now is on our a Facebook group called Afterlife Awareness and After Death Communication. If you just go to Facebook, and I'm not a Facebook genius, but I'm pretty sure if you just go to Facebook and look for groups, it's called Afterlife Awareness and After Death Communication. Another easy way would be to just go to my website, which is afterlifeawareness.com, and sign up on the mailing list, and that way you will definitely get announcements as we confirm everything. It's still, you know, rough around the edges right now. We haven't even nailed down the exact location. We know it's going to be in Phoenix or Scottsdale. We do have a date, but that's why we haven't officially announced it yet, because we're still tweaking some details. So the best way to stay informed is really, I guess, to just get on my mailing list, afterlifeawareness.com. There's a link there. That'll work.
Well, and also, too, I'm going to invite other people who are going to be speaking at the conference onto the show in the coming months to talk about what's happening. And Terry, I definitely would like you to come back to talk more about details as they become firmed up.
Absolutely. And all the speakers, I'm sure, will be very happy to be on your show.
Oh, well, it would be my privilege. Again, I'm finding this to be the most I really want to thank Ann and Herb Perrier. They're the ones that introduced me. We kind of forget how we bumped into each other, but we did. And they've been on the show a couple of times, and they're also going to be speakers at this event. And if you really want to, that they offer a wonderful chance to learn about life on the other side. They have some wonderful awareness. And for anyone, also to everyone who's listening, if you know someone, if you're dealing with the loss of someone very close to you, if you have a friend who is, this isn't just this marketing grab. This is about trying to be of real service. And I'd like to think that all of these people can be of service to people who are struggling with the most deep and personal losses in their life. And it's going to be a very important event, especially for people who are struggling to cope with the loss of someone from the physical plane to the spiritual plane.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, that it's not just a marketing grab, because the way this came about, can I give a little bit of history on it? Many of us, many of the people whose names were mentioned, have we work with grief groups, and we work with bereaved individuals and families, and there are some national grief groups around the country that have invited some of us to speak to their regional conferences and chapter meetings. But at the national level, these groups really don't allow a conversation about afterlife and after-death communication. And also, as a hospice worker, I have found that hospice doesn't really allow this either, even though these are groups that work around the edge of death, dealing with walking up to death's door if you're in hospice, or dealing with bereavement and after death. The subject of the afterlife is still taboo. And I just got to a place where I was so frustrated with running into that in all the work that I was doing that I just decided to find all of you guys and bring us all together to do this conference. And I think I would like to mention to your audience, Mark, that we're all doing this for free. Nobody's getting paid. We're paying our own travel expenses. This is purely a labor of love.
Also, too, that these are people, I mean, it's beyond any kind of, it's non-denominational. And if people who have a scientific bent are welcome to come, too, and to offer their thoughts on this. But I think that if you have the one thing you need to come with is an open mind, because I'd like to think that the quality of this panel, the speakers and everyone involved, is going to cause you to perhaps reexamine some of the beliefs that you have held previously.
And that's what trauma and loss is for, spiritually speaking, isn't it? You know, I have a line that I use in my workshops where I say, pain shifts our position. And it's like if you're sitting on your chair and your leg is bent in a funny way, you get a cramp in your leg and it tells your brain to shift the body to relieve the pain. Well, that happens emotionally too. So when we have extreme trauma and loss, like so many of us do with the deaths of our children, you can look in every theology imaginable and every psychology imaginable and try to figure out, why did this happen to me? And you're not going to find an answer any place other than your personal cosmic journey. And so this happens to shift your position and give you a new perspective and give you the lessons you came to Earth to learn. And that's the only reason I've been able to figure out. That's what my guides tell me, and that's what I teach the people, is let this shift your position.
You know, I remember when my uncle died. He was way too young. He was only 59 years old. Died of a massive heart attack. And I remember my dad, because it was his brother, it was his younger brother. I had never seen my dad and my brother cry in public. And at my uncle's funeral, both my dad and my brother were just wailing. I mean, they were outwardly just crying. And
wow.
I think when you lose a loved one like that so young, there's just something in you, like you've lost a part of your soul. And there's a lot of people that carry this around and they don't get help for it. You know, they just feel like, oh, I can take the burden on or whatever. But I'll tell you, I think that it has stayed with both my brother and my dad to this day. And, you know, it was maybe 5-6 years ago that my uncle died, but I think that people need a release. They need to know that their loved one is still there, that they're still with them, and it's a passage, but you know, they're still around you. And I think there's a lot of people out there just hurting, you know, because they don't know where to go. They don't know how to take care of the pain they feel.
And there aren't that many outlets. There aren't many places for them to go. You know, they have the clergy. They have their religious structures. And most people that I have worked with, and I've worked with hundreds, thousands of bereaved people, are not finding comfort there. Then they have therapy, grief groups. All of that is good. But none of that addresses the reason for the trauma, the spiritual growth plan that made that story to happen so that the soul involved could grow, and the fact that that person who died is still there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what's missing. And, you know, I feel like we're evolving into that now, because certainly that kind of practice was around in ancient times. Then we lost it. Now hopefully we're getting it back. You know, certainly the Tibetan Buddhists knew it and the Egyptians knew it, you know, to work with the afterlife in order to sort of close the circle, you know, to put closure, I guess, if you will, even though it's not really closure because nothing really ends. But yes, this is sorely needed, definitely. That's why we're doing it.
Well, I can tell you that in my own experience, I didn't know, my family was not very well equipped to deal with the passing of my father when he was 33. I was 11, and all I ever heard was just keep moving, get on with it, get on, keep moving, don't dwell. And it was advice that was coming from a survival standpoint. Everyone was trying to tell us how to survive. And I don't think the people I was surrounded by really knew how to deal with it either. And I would say, too, then having my father, I really do feel like I saw him afterwards. All I could think of was that I was losing my mind and that everyone, no one really wanted to hear about it. And so I kind of tucked it away. But I don't want people to have to experience loss in that kind of a vacuum. I don't want them to feel that if they're visited or if they have ideas about communicating after death, that they're crazy. I don't want them to feel that it's a mistake, that it's wrong, that it's condemned by God. That's not right.
Hey, Terry, what do you feel people will come away with from this conference?
Exactly what Mark just said. He said it perfectly, that they won't feel alone or ostracized. I think they'll come away from it with incredible hope and peace that, number one, their loved one is not gone, but just vibrating on another frequency and very close to them. Number two, they can actually make contact with this person, and not the way maybe that Mark Nelson makes contact, but in their own way, to start recognizing the signs and symbols that come to them. And really, I think Mark Ireland, you said this earlier, that it's all about trusting what you receive. It's probably 99% about that, because we're getting messages from the other side and the higher realms all the time, constantly. They're like jumping around, waving their arms, trying to get our attention and sending us signals. But we just, for many reasons, are oblivious to it. And so I think a big thing that people will learn from the processes that are going to be done in this conference is how to get the doubt out of the way, how to get the fear out of the way, and trust what you receive. And most people, when I speak at the Compassionate Friends conferences, and I ask people, how many of you have heard from your child on the other side in one way or another, every single hand goes up, whether it's dreams or, you know, little messages like a butterfly lands on the window, you know, all those things. So they know it. They know that it happens, but they just aren't quite ready to make that commitment because there's so much fear and cultural bias and everything that stands in the way. So I think what they'll get from this conference is they'll be able to step over into a higher level of trust.
And also, too, it's just not weepy-eyed sentimentality. This is real communication. This is real information being passed to us in ways that go far beyond just happy thoughts and, you know, hopeful feelings. It's evidential communication that can be validated, that can only be sent and presented by conscious beings.
Very true.
I want to bring up an experience Mark and I had last year. We lost two of our dogs. They had been with us for 15 years and 14 years. We had had them a long time. You know, my daughter basically grew up with them. And one of the dogs who I was close to, he died of pancreatic cancer. And Mark and I were both there in the vet's office when, you know, it was time for him to pass. And I remember I felt really great that Mark was there with us, you know, with our dog. And I remember asking Mark after, like, or actually during the process, is he out of pain? Is he out of pain? And once he had passed, because it was very quick, you know, he said, yeah, he's running around now. He feels good. He's back to his old self. He's out of pain. And I remember feeling very, very comforted and very good that he no longer had to deal with this cancer and that he was safe and he was okay. And he still was around us. You know, he still was with us and he still is to this day. I still feel him around. But the fact that Mark was there, was able to take us through that passing process was just phenomenal. And I wish, you know, I wish more people would allow a psychic to be with them during that process. I think it would help with the passing, with the healing, and it was just a wonderful thing.
I'm really glad you said that. And, you know, there needs to be somebody whose job it is to do that, and it doesn't have to be a psychic, but it has to be what we call a trained transition guide. And I've actually been through this training as a certified transition guide who does exactly what you describe. And if you look at ancient religions, you know, certainly the Tibetan Book of the Dead is all about the Buddhist priest sits with the body and helps the soul leave the body and guides it through the various passages and things that it's going to encounter along the way. They actually do this for 40 days. Many, many cultures have done this. In our culture, this is absolutely unthinkable. And one of the things that I'm trying to do with this transition guides group that I'm in is have it. We actually tried to get it put into the new health care plan. We were pretty
ambitious. God bless you. God bless you for trying.
It was pretty fun. We wrote letters. I mean, we did everything to say, like, can we have somebody on staff at a hospital? Not the chaplain who comes in and does last rites, which they only do if you're Catholic and if you ask for it, but somebody who every time a patient is dying and there's a code blue, they call me and I go to that patient and I guide them through. You know, this, I think this is as important in a hospital as anybody else, but in hospitals, of course, people don't die consciously and it's very sad. And so, yes, it's exactly like you said, what happened with your dog.
Well, you know, you figure there's people that are around you helping you with the birth process. As you come into life, why not help you with the death process as you're going on and passing on to, you know, the next life? So I don't see any there. To me, there's no difference. It's a passage, and you're just helping someone through that transition.
And Terry,
well, and they call them. I'm sorry.
Isn't it common for people who are passing to report other loved ones there, and they're all of a sudden who are visible to them who passed years earlier, like the greeting committee, if you will?
Absolutely. And then if they're in a hospital or, you know, dying near their family, that people say they're hallucinating. So it must be the drugs, the medications making them hallucinate. That's what they say. You know, and they need people like us to be sitting at that bedside to say, no, you're not hallucinating. Yes, that is your grandmother. Oh, look, there's your dog. Here they come, you know. I mean, that's what a beautiful way to die. I hope that I have a death like that. You're all invited.
I hope it's an interesting thought, but I'm not sure I want to be there when you're passing. Thanks for the invite. Hopefully, if I'm available, you know I'll be there, Terry.
Thank you. I'll remember that.
Another thing is it's there. It's to help the people actually passing too. It's to comfort them, because, you know, I can't imagine it right now, but I'm sure that the process is very scary. And if you have someone there who is able to, you know, help you through that process and comfort you in some way, and, you know, show, you know, basically, I mean, I hate to use this comparison, show you the door, so to speak. But, you know, if there's someone there to help you, I think it would make that process so much better, you know.
It should be something that's in our culture. You know, in Europe, before the 15th century, they had death midwives. And in the Celtic world, they were called Anamkara, which meant soul friend to the dying. And that's what they used to have, these buildings that were like hospitals, and people would be giving birth on one side of the room and dying on the other side of the room, and midwives would be going back and forth between the two. And children and dogs were running around, and minstrels were playing music. I mean, there's a very famous place in France that used to be used as this. This is where the term hospice comes from. It's the same root word as hospitality, meaning a hotel or a way station between one place and another. So this kind of work has been around. It's nothing new, and it just kind of got stuffed down into suppression because of, you know, certain religious doctrines, you know, which we don't
and
go into
and or materialism, the view that, you know, death is permanent, it's something to be not talked about and avoided. Our culture denies death, and so we don't want to face it or talk about it.
No.
And a lot of it, I think, comes from that mindset as well.
Well, I want to just go back and say I wanted to thank the Catholic Church for coming in and burning everyone at the stake who tried to facilitate both of those groups, so the dying and the birthing.
Exactly. But now that we're all back here now, all of us that were burned at the stake. They couldn't get rid of us, no matter how hard they tried.
No. In fact, you know, the funny thing is I've heard now that the dead are able to vote in Chicago. And so if only we can get them to, if we could register them, I think, Terry, that perhaps this, you might have been able to pass this legislation that you were working on.
Well, maybe we can get them to join our Facebook page.
I would love that. Wouldn't that make for an interesting, I mean, certainly they probably have something to say. Mark, you're probably going, oh my gosh, what did I get into here?
I heard something fascinating today. And you were talking about it earlier about, you know, people being lost between dimensions. And I heard an explanation from somebody today that was so great. I'd never heard this before. And they said, people who, you know, because you take your beliefs with you when you cross over, and then you are met on the other side with guides and teachers who help you work through stuff. And people who believe that after death there's nothing, just flatline blackness, end of existence, what happens is they die, they leave the body, and then they find that they're still here, that they're still conscious. And because their belief system says, well, you can't still be conscious after you're dead, they don't believe they're dead. So simple. I never even thought of it that way. But that's how strong the belief system is. And I have seen this in hospice work, where of all the people, regardless of their belief systems, even if they believe they're going to burn in hell, the people who believe there's nothing are the ones who have the most problem and the most fear.
Well, that certainly makes sense. You know, it truly does.
The notion of the oblivion of consciousness.
Well, I'd like to think that all of us at this conference can open people's minds. So if there's someone on the fence, we can help them come to grips with the fact that the end of the physical body is by no means the end of the conscious mind. And I think
Absolutely. And
all of us are going to at least plant some seeds and hopefully spread the word that that's the case. Well, I wanted to give you both a chance. Mark, where can people learn more about you, and where can they buy your wonderful book?
Well, the best place is my site, soulshiftbook.com. And if they want to read more about my father or see videos of his demonstrations, that's drrichardireland.com. That's drrichardireland.com. And there's, you know, information about him. And on my site, there's information about the book and some of my appearances on TV and things like that, if they want to hear me talk about it and a little bit more about the story and a synopsis and things like that.
Well, I can't say enough about it. And just because of timing, I don't always get a chance to finish all the books that are, you know, I try to be very able to ask good questions, but it fortunately, I was able to receive your book soon enough to read it and read it cover to cover, so I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Terry, where can people learn more about this great conference, and if there is someone that they know that could use some of the contact with some of the people who will be there, where do they go?
I would say the best place to go would be to our Facebook group. And like I said, I am not a Facebook guru. So how do you find a Facebook group? Somebody ask a friend who knows how to do that.
Well,
the name of the group is
search bar, Terry. There's
a search
bar.
Bar.
It's really easy.
Okay.
So if they're a Facebook member, they go on to Facebook. They go to the search bar, and they just type in, what is it, afterlife?
Afterlife Awareness and After Death Communication is the name of the group.
And it'll come up, you know, right
great.
On top.
And
that's
if,
perfect.
And if they run out of options and they're completely hopeless, Terry, what's your website?
Afterlifeawareness.com.
Even someone like myself could remember that.
Can remember that. And, you know, and we don't have a page for the conference yet. So the Afterlife Awareness Conference doesn't really have an internet presence. So at the moment, it's going to be the Facebook page and my website until we get everything set up.
All right,
guys. But we are going to get that done.
Yes,
yes,
we
will. It'll be done within by the end of the month.
Oh, wonderful. And we'll get you guys back soon to talk about it. Certainly want to get some of the other speakers. And we'll get you back, Terry, since you're I describe you as very much a driving force behind this wonderful event to talk about it some more. So I wanted to thank you both for taking the time to speak with all of us tonight. And just so you know, we have listeners going across the United States, Finland, Bosnia,
Montenegro,
certainly Canada, the UK, and we have all of these friends who are listening tonight, and we have a couple thousand of our podcast listeners that will also enjoy this. So I wanted to thank you both for sharing your time and your wonderful insights.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for everything you do.
Well, and Barb, we'll say goodnight to you guys, and we'll be in touch.
Take care.
Good night.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Good night. Well, I really think that Mark and Terry are two very interesting people. I'm so excited about this event. I mean, I love doing the paranormal investigating, but this is where my heart is, and that is in trying to help people who are dealing with loss. And that's where it started for me, was trying to understand what happened and is there a life afterwards. And that getting to understand that is where I came to learn so much. And so I'm thankful for them, and I'm glad that we're all here. So I also wanted to say we have a little time for readings. If anyone is interested in a reading, would like to speak with me, I'll be glad to look at a question for you. My number is 818, our number here. Barb and I is 818-574-8412, 818-574-8412. If you'd like us if you'd like me to look at a question, Barbara is a sensitive too. She may weigh in, but I'll be very glad to respond to any questions you might have. Next week, we're actually looking at a couple of, we're either going to have Beth Brown, or we're going to have another gentleman, Dan. What's Dan's last name? He's a runes expert. So we're looking at one of these two terrific people, but we're going to be having some more interesting people coming up. We're also going to have a lady who wrote on the 29th, wrote a book about the psychic and the priest. It's a story, and that's a Mennonite woman who is she was raised in the Mennonite tradition, discovered that she was a psychic, left the Mennonites, and ended up meeting and marrying a Catholic priest. They will be with us. The author of a book on them will be on the 29th. But next week, we're going to learn about either runes or southern plantations. What could be more different? One's a little Teutonic and one's a little southern. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I just want to go back to that Afterlife Awareness Conference. I think it's like high time, you know, because I think people have put the stigma about dying, like it's just this icky thing, and, you know,
it's painful for all of us.
It's painful, yes. Yeah, it is. And, you know, you and I have dealt with families that have lost young children. You know, it's hard. It's very hard, and it hurts. And I just think that we can't ignore it and think, you know, we're going to, like, put a blind eye to it. Let's, you know, embrace it and go through it and kind of somehow ease that transition as best we can. And I think having a psychic there or a spiritual person there, it's very important, you know. Oh, we have a call.
We have a call. Hold on. Hello, this is Mark. How can I help you?
Hi, I was on your chat room. My name is, I was on Dandy Inferno. My name is Kim.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Hi. Okay. I kind of wondered, you know, about my dog and my grandmother, if they're all right. And I don't know how to, what kind of question to ask you, really.
You just did. You just did.
Oh, uh-huh.
Okay. I would also tell you that, you know, did your dog used to like it to get tangled in your legs almost?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that. The first thing I saw was a dog wrapping around your legs, right in between your legs, and wrapping around them. And I would say that this wonderful doggie is still there in spirit for you. Okay.
So, oh, that's wonderful.
So if you reach down and think of it was him.
Yes.
Give him a stroke. I think that he's still there for you. And then so don't feel alone when you come home. Admit the house may feel very empty, but I think that this wonderful doggy is still there for you. Did his name begin with an M?
No, it was an S.
All right. Well, still, I'm seeing a male dog wrapping around your legs, and I think he would still be there for you. What was your grandmother's name?
Huh?
Your grandmother's name?
Artis.
Art. Can you say that again?
Yeah, it's spelled A R. No, it's spelled weird. A. It's hard to spell. A R D.
Okay.
Y S. She had a hard name to spell.
Okay. Well, I have to tell you that our loved ones and our family, if they may have struggled in life, I'm hearing that this lady had some a lot of struggles to her life. I would tell you that once you leave the physical plane, that she didn't have to deal with all of that. Did she have a struggle walking? Was there difficulty walking at the end?
Yes.
In particular, with was there a severe problem with one of her legs?
Yes.
And almost, it feels like if there was an amputation, is almost what it feels like.
Not really. It was more to do with her heart, but she did have problems with her legs. I was rubbing her legs. That's weird when she passed over.
Okay. Well, I saw a question, a problem, pain in the legs, and that she is not dealing with that anymore. So I would tell you that the problem, if you're rubbing her legs when she passed, that's probably why she's asking me to bring them up to you now. If I misunderstood it a little bit, but that's, she was aware of what you were doing for her, even if consciously she didn't seem to quite be able to respond or thank you. I know that she was there, and it almost feels like one of the last things she did say was thank you.
Wow. You know, I was the last one she even talked to, and she grabbed my hand, and she was so full of fear, and she says, Kim, I really loved you, and it's had a profound effect on me, you know, the fear that I saw in her eyes. And it kind of even scares me about death in general. So,
well, I can tell you that if she's telling me about legs and that one of the last things you did for her was rub her legs, I don't feel any fear surrounding her at all. I feel a lot of comfort. And also, too, the fact that you were there for her was so important. Even if she was afraid, try talking to, you know, getting a baby to calm down when it's being born. I mean, that's not an easy thing. And while the transition may, to us at a physical level, appear to be very horrible or difficult or painful or you know, it isn't, it extends for us after they pass.
Wow. One more thing, I don't want to take up all your time.
No problem.
But when you mentioned legs, if she had a heart surgery, and they took the veins out of her legs, and that's strange, and that's why her legs are bothering her so bad.
Wow.
And
yeah.
Well, that's wonderful that you knew that.
Well, my mistake about saying an amputation, I just saw surgery around her leg. So that's interesting. So if she's able to convey that, then I would like you to know that she's still aware of the fact that you care about her, and that I'm not afraid anymore, honey, is what I would hear. I'm not afraid anymore, honey. That pain, and that's also too, the pain of it is gone. It's very easy. It sounds like a small thing, but was she very good when she was able to get around about watering her plants and flowers? Was that something very important to her?
Oh yeah, she was like a clean freak and took care of everything like that.
Well, I'm seeing her walking around taking care of the plants and
oh.
So.
Wow. Well, thank you, Mark. I don't want to take up much of your time.
Well,
that was really interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, and I'm glad you did, and call again.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Barb, I don't know if there's anyone behind us, but we should probably say goodnight.
Oh, okay.
Unless there's someone that calls right away.
I think that's it.
I think that may be it. Well, we appreciate, you know what, we're going to have to do another show where we just focus on readings again. If someone wants, if you guys want us to do that, please let us know in the chat. When is Mark going to do more of a reading show? Because it's my pleasure to do that.
Yeah, we can have like a 1 hour a guest. And then what would you guys think about doing 1 hour of total readings? Marco?
Start with an hour.
Right.
Because there's a lot of our listeners on each show, so it gets a little late.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But having an hour of total readings from Mark, what would you guys think of that?
You know what? Let's try this, Barb. Well, going forward, we've got some guests scheduled. Perhaps we can get them to come on at 8 o'clock instead of 7 and make the first hour for our listeners, where it'll be my pleasure to see if I can't bring someone through for you, answer a question, anything like that. So I wanted to thank you again for listening. Tune in next week, where we're going to have either Beth Brown or, what's his name? Dan Turnbull. Beth or Dan?
Marla's birthday.
Oh, Marla's birthday. Happy birthday to the lovely and talented and wonderfully...
And Cece.
Boy, a couple of our friends. Marla and Cece, happy birthday to a pair of real lovely ladies and friends. All the best to you. And Danny Inferno, my pleasure, Kim. I'm glad you called, and please stay in touch, and thank you for listening. So until next week, have a positively psychic week. Thank you, Mark Ireland and Terry Daniel. Great guests, and it's been a real pleasure for us, and have a wonderful evening. And if you need our psychic reading, you can reach me at Mark at Positively Psychic. That's Mark at Positively Psychic. And Barbara's always available to talk at Barb at Positive, or is it Barbara?
B. Nelson.
B. Nelson at Positively Psychic. She's not doing readings, but she can answer questions. Have a great night. And you can also catch up with me at Positively Mark on Twitter or on Facebook. Thank you and good night.
Good night, everyone.
This has been a Para-X production, sponsored by CBS Radio. We'll see you next week on Positively Psychic. Barbara Nelson from Positively Psychic, with your host, psychic medium Mark Christopher Nelson. on Para X Radio. Mark and I would like to thank all of our listeners for their support of our web radio show, Positively Psychic. With your support, we can keep bringing you the best web radio programming and Podomatic and iTunes downloading. So keep listening, and we'll keep bringing you great paranormal programs from Positively Psychic. With guests like John Searle, Patrick Burns, Marla Gibson, Allison Dubois, and Chris Fleming. So tune in each week, every Thursday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern, on Para-X Radio, the leader in paranormal web radio. Thanks again for your support, and we'll see you here next time on Positively Psychic.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.